The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
This is Mike Consul with Jeff Dorman. Welcome to the May 2018 Dorman Report. Our topic is the inaugural meeting held earlier this month of the IREOC, a members-only event that has been designed to provide a platform for candid discussions among real estate operating companies, hence the REOC and the acronym. So real estate operating companies, as well as institutional investors and their investment managers, on forming and running more profitable and productive REOC partnerships and investments. And Jeff, this meeting, and I assume future meetings of this organization, since the intent is to make this an annual event, had a strict ratio of two real estate operating companies for every one institutional capital provider, the idea being to ensure that the attendees are able to engage and get to know one another both professionally and on a personal level. How do you think the meeting went?
Well, I think it went swimmingly. We had a great group of people. It was held up in Utah at Deer Valley at the Montage, so a really nice venue. Kind of a weird time of year, mud season as they call it up there, so there wasn't any skiing or hiking, so people had nothing to do except really to focus on what we were talking about, which is part of what we had hoped to have happen, even though it was absolutely gorgeous outside. The meeting was structured into three different days. The first day was a half day called the Board of Governors Day. And we have a 12-member set of three different councils that comprise the Board of Governors, 12 investment managers, 12 investors, and 12 real estate operating companies. And the whole purpose of the Board of Governors is to kind of set the agenda for where we're going to focus. So where, if anywhere, do we want to develop standards or guidelines to help improve best practices in the industry? What kind of training needs do the individual members of the organization have? And what kind of educational needs? What do they want to know that they don't know now? Were the topics of that first day. The second day is more the regular council meeting day, where the whole focus was more on meeting the information needs of the group. And at our prior Board of Governors meeting, it was held about 6 months ago, people identified that the investors really want to understand a little bit more about how the world looks from the investment manager and the operating company perspective. What are the issues and concerns that they have? And then the operators and the investment manager, of course, want to understand how things look from the investor perspective. And more specifically, really kind of interested in how a deal gets put together, from how do you go about forming a relationship, identifying a potential partner, cultivating that relationship, building relationship over time, and how does it eventually get to a deal, and how do you get the terms of those deals negotiated, and what are some key deal points from both sides of the table. So those are the kinds of discussions we had, and it was fascinating. I would say that some of the investment management community that is not yet engaged with us have expressed some fears that what we're doing by putting the institute together is promoting the idea of disintermediating the investment manager role. And I can tell you from just listening to the discussions that that's not at all, certainly that wasn't our intention, but sometimes you have different intentions and things get out of your control. That's not at all what's going on here. Some of the investors, the larger investors, CalPERS, CalSTRS, and others, are intrigued with the idea of doing more direct joint ventures because they've gotten good results from the joint ventures they've done. But they have a bandwidth problem. They can't grow their staffs as fast as they can grow their portfolios. And so there's a limitation on how many of these kinds of deals they actually can do. And in many cases, they want to put an oversight advisor involved in the middle of the transaction because they just don't have the staff resources to supervise and do the daily interaction that needs to take place in managing these things. Smaller investors don't have a choice. They just can't access these direct joint venture deals. They don't have the staff to be able to do it, even though they're intrigued by it. So that's kind of interesting. And then we looked at, in terms of the program, we looked at a number of different ways in which these organizations or these deals get put together. We looked at specified deals where investors or investment managers are looking to form deal-specific partnerships. So they're one-off transactions. How do those things form? How do those things get put together? And then we looked at programmatic joint ventures and what are the elements that lead to the creation of a joint programmatic joint venture? And what are the steps that you have to go through in order to eventually get to the point of actually doing that? And then we looked at vertically integrated operator manager funds, you know, funds that are operated in effect by real estate operating companies. They're almost as if you're investing in a vertically integrated platform that's advised by an operator. They're not outsourcing any of the services that they're providing and what those things are all about. So, you know, it was a really fascinating series of discussions over time. Then in addition, we took a look at the latest evolution and what's going on in the data tech and real tech side of the business. You know, what's coming, what's happening now, how are people taking advantage of it? And we had guys like John D'Angelo from Real Foundations, who's our strategic partner in the IREOC, Craig Blanchard from McKenna Capital Management, and Alex Robison, who's the co-founder and CEO of Jupiter Square, and then Chris Shada, who's the CEO of Real Foundations, all on a panel talking about, you know, what they're observing, what they're seeing going on, what best practices look like, what the issues are and the challenges people are faced with, and why real estate in general has been so slow to adopt you know, real estate technology over time. So that was, you know, the main, you know, meeting day. It was really intense, full of really good good content. The next day was really a workshop, which is a little bit more hands-on, a lot more interactive. So first one was the importance of data flows in accessing and serving institutional capital. So talking about how data flows from, you know, the ultimately from the tenants to the property manager or asset manager or operating partner up to the investment manager and all the way up to the investor, how each step of the way the needs are slightly different and the problems and challenges associated with putting together a good process and then putting in a good governance process to make sure that whatever process you put in place actually works and doesn't backslide. And talking there again was Craig Blanchard from McKenna, Dan Durking, who's the president of NCREIF, and Mike Levy, who's really representing the investment manager side, you know, Crow Holdings Capital Partners, because they've just gone through this whole process of, you know, examining their data processes and trying to get them more streamlined and more efficient over time. The second workshop we had on day two, which was again a half day, was the state of REOC partnership structures and terms. And, you know, Brian May, a partner at Meyer Brown, led a discussion with John Kropke, a principal of the Townsend Group on the principal side of the business, as opposed to the consulting side. Taylor Mammon, who's managing director of RCLCO. And then Andrew Silverstein is a partner at Almanac Realty Investors. And Zach Stassi, a managing partner at Park Hill. So everybody kind of looking at, you know, what are the kinds of key issues that you have to look at when you're trying to negotiate and structure a partnership, and from each side and each angle. It was a fascinating discussion, and it was amazing that even on the third day of a three-day conference, most of the folks stayed to the very bitter end because they wanted to get the knowledge that was being passed along from these programs.
Talk about the yardstick of success for the Institute, Jeff. I mean, obviously, we're looking to add additional members, but from the members' standpoint, they have their own ideas about what success would be. But from our standpoint, what will success look like for the members? Where, how will, what will happen with their operations or their efforts to cement deals and such?
Well, we always start everything we do from an investor focus. So the first measure of success will be if the investors feel like they got great value and that the objectives of the Institute, which is to help real estate operating partnerships run better, were accomplished if they felt their operating partnerships were running better. Another measure of success would be if the membership feels that they actually are able to find partners more quickly, more efficiently, and at a lower cost. And if they feel like the best practices we're hoping to promulgate over time help streamline their operations and make them capable of running more efficiently and therefore more profitably, making more money. Because I think one of the things that's a common concern that almost everybody, whether you're an investor, investment manager, or a real estate operating company face is, you know, fee compression, you know, and consolidation. And the investment managers are feeling it because of bandwidth issues. You know, how much can their existing staff really handle? That's one of the concerns they have. And can they continue to grow their staff? That's one of the issues that they have. The investors and the investment managers are facing continued fee compression. And this is only going to get worse as the defined contribution pension market becomes a more important part of the mix. Because in a defined benefit pension plan, while participants are concerned about costs, and certainly the people who run the plans are concerned about cost, if costs get out of hand or costs are, end up being a little bit more than you had planned, the plan sponsor is still obligated to pay the benefits. But in a defined contribution pension plan, if the plan sponsor doesn't carefully watch those costs, they come right out of the pocket of the participant. And so the participants are watching these costs like a hawk. And if you went down to Australia, where the shift from defined benefit to defined contribution plan is almost complete, you would find that the biggest issue they have down there for anybody delivering services to pension plans is cost. And so if you can run more efficiently, you can keep ahead of the profit curve and keep and preserve your margins. And that's something that I think that everybody wants to do. So if we're able over time, it's going to take time to make it happen, but if we're over time to help the participants in forming these joint ventures preserve their margins, then we will have accomplished our objective. I should also state another fact, and that is that not everybody does joint ventures. As a matter of fact, probably the majority of investment managers don't, or don't do it exclusively. A lot of them, some do it exclusively. That's all that they do. Usually you find this in the opportunity fund sector. Many investment managers either don't do them at all or do them as part of their overall strategy. So this is not an industry organization the way that the Pension Real Estate Association or the National Association of Real Estate Investment Managers would be. It's really taking a very small subset, the people that are actively engaged in forming and operating real estate operating partnerships. And that's where we're trying to add some value and create some value for the participants.
So for the real estate operating companies, is the bigger issue that they don't have the relationships with the people they need, which this event at least got a start on that, or is it that they just didn't understand how this world works, just the mechanics of it?
Well, I think it's a little of both. Usually what happens with the real estate operating companies, they start with family and friends money, and then eventually over time they scale up a little bit and become more capable, and they outstrip the ability of their family and friends to provide them with capital. Then they go out and start looking for alternative capital sources. One place to look is the private wealth advisory marketplace or the high net worth investor marketplace, and that's certainly a viable avenue, and a lot are going there. Others gravitate towards the institutional market, and typically where they first get their experience of serving institutional capital typically is through their relationship with an investment manager, be it, you know, one of our sponsors or a company like Blackstone that hasn't been a sponsor, who does exclusively joint ventures with operators. So, and these guys, you know, they come from the world of a real estate operator. You know, they understand the nuts and bolts of real estate backwards and forwards. And they understand a little bit about serving capital. Of course, they've had capital partners. But the demands of institutional capital are much higher than the typical demands of an individual investor might be, and certainly more than a family or friend might be who, you know, is operating purely on trust. And so a lot of them don't understand the language, the culture, why certain things are required, like certain reporting requirements or certain compliance requirements or certain information requirements. And understanding not just what they're supposed to deliver, but the context, understanding why it's important to an investor. You know, understanding that an investor, for example, might meet with their board once a month. And if the reports that have to filter up through their investment managers aren't received on time, they're as useless as a football program the day after the game was played. So, you know, it's really important that they understand that there's a reason why there's so much urgency placed and so much importance placed on getting this information in. And then to understand the complexity of the fact that they're not the only operating partner of a particular manager, or they're not the only operating partner of a particular investor, that they may have, you know, tens, maybe hundreds of these kind of relationships, all of which are sending up information. And if that information doesn't come up in the same format, or at least a similar format, it creates chaos at the investor level when they're trying to, or in the investment manager level, when they're trying to consolidate and make sense out of all this jumble of information that's coming in. So, you know, they may be only managing one asset out of a portfolio of hundreds of assets, and yet they don't really understand how they plug in. All they see is that they're being asked to do a lot of stuff they don't understand why. You know, it's kind of like a typical response from a real estate operating company would be something like this. You hired us to do this deal. We're doing the deal. It's a really stressful deal. We're working really hard on it. And if you noticed, we're doing really good for you. And now you're asking us to fill out this 15-page report. I mean, what is it that you really want? Do you want us to work on the deal, or do you want us to fill out the forms? Now, of course, the answer is we need you to do both. It's not that we want you to do both. We need you to do both. But they need to understand why, the context. And so part of what the Institute will do is help them understand that. In a sense, it's kind of a charm school, a finishing school for operators to help them be positioned to be much better operators over time. Unfortunately, you know, there's probably hundreds of thousands of potential operating partners that could be members of our Institute, and we're not going to be able to accommodate them all. Right now, we've got about 26 operating partner members. Our goal is to get to 100 and then reassess, and we'll probably never get larger than 400. So this is going to be a really exclusive club for those people that are lucky enough to be able to get in, to really get close to investment managers and investors in a way that wasn't possible for them to do before.
So 400 max, but how many real estate operating companies are there in the United States?
You know, nobody really knows. That's the other thing. You can't go online and search for list of real estate operating companies or real estate operating company lists and come up with an answer. You can enter real estate operating companies and you'll get like 32,000 responses. So that doesn't mean there's 32,000 operators out there. We have no idea of knowing how many there are. So, excuse me, 32 million. But you know, part of what we're doing through the Institute is we're populating our fund tracker database with real estate operating partners or real estate operating company information. So it will become easier for investors and investment managers who want to find potential partners to locate them. And it will be easier for the operators to find those investment managers and those investors who really want to do joint ventures with operators. Hasn't been possible to do that before. And we're already well on the way to populating a database to be able to do that. So it's going to be a really kind of unique attribute of our database. It's going to allow people to connect with each other in a way they haven't been able to do in the past.
You always do a postmortem on company events. You want to know how the event went through the eyes and ears of the various constituencies that attend the meeting. So based on the feedback you got from the meeting, will 2019 be essentially a replica of this meeting, or did the feedback convince you that some changes need to be made, not necessarily changes, but enhancements or just some variations?
Oh, yeah. You know, you always learn when you do these things, Mike. I think one of the things we concluded is that we had the program a little too tight, and people need a little bit of break time in between some of the programs, because it really was intense. You were there, so you know. I mean, it was like session after session after session after session. It didn't mean we didn't have breaks, but learning to time those a little bit better, I think, is going to make sense. And then I think we got some really good feedback at the Board of Governors meeting about how to titrate the program and the kinds of things that they really want to get. So we'll be able to build an even better, more fine-tuned program at the next event. And as a matter of fact, you know, we really did get rave reviews from the participants, and many of them suggested that if we had a second event, that they would be interested in attending and schedule allowing. I'm not sure whether we got a large enough group to try to attempt to do two meetings a year. We do have a tool that we're using called Yammer, which is part of the Microsoft 360 platform, which is kind of like a combination Facebook and SharePoint platform for business. And it's invitation-only controlled. The whole goal is not to get as many human beings on Earth as you can in it, but to get your small group of people who want to work together and collaborate on ideas together involved in communicating in between meetings. And we've already had one deal posted to that Yammer network and already had one investor close the loop and say, let's talk offline and explore this deal. But it's not just for deal exchange. Part of it is for deal exchange and connecting. Another part of it is for collaborating and working together on specific projects. So we have a group for the annual meeting. We have a group for guidelines and best practices. We have a group for software reviews and that sort of thing, kind of a Yelpish type part of the site where people can assign ratings to different software platforms. So lots of different ways that people can collaborate. The biggest challenge we have is it's a new kind of tool and most people aren't used to working with it. So our challenge is to get people engaged and online and starting to use it. But slowly but surely we're making progress and people are starting to get on board. And as I said, we've already connected at least one investor and one operating partner with a potential deal. So that's a good thing.